Caution, the Mark Unger Show contains adult content intended for an adult audience. And besides that, he's really weird. Welcome to the Mark Unger Show with international marriage speaker and author of Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage, Mark Unger. This is your source for practical, down-to-earth marriage advice without all the over-spiritualization or romantic nonsense. And now the host of the Mark Unger Show, Mark Unger.
Wild with delirious joy, they've joined the Mark Unger Show, the show that deals with all things concerning. Hello, where's the
you
button?
You still don't have it together.
Marriage.
Goodness gracious!
I thought you said this was a good day.
This is a great day. Considering the alternative could be death, this is a fabulous day. I'm, of course, your host, the one, the only Mark Unger. Joining me as always, the ever lovely and charming Diane Brierley, and of course, the wonderful Philip James Gunger. He is wonderful.
He is.
I always mess up my camera shots.
I know, though. It depends on how he sits. Sometimes he shrinks, sometimes he's stupid. Engineering the show, as always, the very talented and incredibly creepy Timothy Robert Stray. Pushing buttons, twisting knobs, and trying to stay awake during the production of this incomprehensibly boring show. Did I say his name right?
Timothy Robert Ray.
Did I? Okay.
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Did he say this boring Phil?
This boring Phil?
Not boring Phil.
Boring show.
This boring show.
Oh.
Are you boring?
I thought you just called me out.
I said you're wonderful.
I know. And then
you're wonderful. Why would I say you're boring Phil if you're wonderful?
He's wonderful.
Anyway, right, we've lost half our audience. This is the show that handles your
shenanigans.
Relational marital questions. I can't even talk today. It's all about marriage. You send us your emails, we answer your emails. What do you got?
You're just rather flummoxed
this morning.
I don't know what's going on.
I don't know. Who cares?
Okay. We're finishing up the list of the things married men need to stop doing.
Stop doing.
You need to stop giving your career and hobbies your best and giving your wife your leftovers. He says, we've all been guilty at times of giving our best efforts to other people and pursuits and then giving our leftovers to the ones who should matter most. Let's make every effort to give our very best energies to our families.
Yeah, I got a problem with that one. And especially when people start talking about priorities, you know. God comes first, family second, work last. And I get that in terms of priorities. But in practice, it's hard to really put that, it depends on what somebody's thinking. The truth of the matter, you spend the most amount of time in the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
You spend the most amount of your life working.
Mm-hmm.
Then, unless you pray for 3-4 hours a day
mm-hmm.
with your kids and your family, mm-hmm. and then with God. So I agree, that's the proper order of priorities, but it doesn't necessarily mean you give it the same amount of time and energy.
Right.
So when someone says, give your family as much energy as you give your job, I just think, really? Your job, look, it's part of the curse. Your job sucks the life out of you. You work and you do stuff and you got to put up with, except some people have fabulous bosses, so nothing but unending joy, for example, in your position.
Yeah.
But for the rest of us, that we do things and, you know, you come home and you're fried. And, you know, to someone say, well, you're supposed to give me the energy that you gave for your job. I don't know. I think this makes people just feel worse. Look, at the end of the day, the most important thing is not your job. It is your family. And even more than your family, the most important thing is your connection with God.
Mm-hmm.
But to measure that in terms of
time
is absurd. And in terms of energy, I think, is absurd. And that's what this is implying. So I don't think this is particularly helpful. I know what they're trying to say. You know, you give all, you know, you love your, you know, you give your best at work and then you don't give your best at home. So I know what they're trying to say. I just think that people stumble over this. I don't think it's particularly helpful. If there's anything, in my opinion, that hurts marriages today, by and large, it's unrealistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of react and pull back when I hear, and I think some of the greatest offenders of this are the Christian community, Christian marriage shows like this, mm-hmm. and books and stuff like that that make everything sound, you know, so it's supposed to be a certain way, and then when it's not, people get upset. So I don't know. I got a problem with that, you know.
But you do have to make your wife feel important.
Yeah, I know, like, but I wouldn't measure it in terms of energy.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
Like, for you, you cannot possibly, like, you're out on the weekend doing the seminar Friday and Saturday, the energy that you put into that for 2 days, you can't possibly give that. I mean, really, because spend a lot of energy doing it.
Actually, people, like, if we'll go to dinner and stuff mm-hmm. afterwards and stuff like that, my wife gets mad at me and says, everybody thinks you're mad. Mm-hmm. I go, they do. You're not talking. I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, yeah, you can't just keep doing that all the time. So I don't know. I'm just concerned about the unrealistic expectations. You know, for example, one of the classic unrealistic expectations, and most of this usually are women. Women are the ones who generally tend to be more upset in relationships than men. Mm-hmm. It's just true. Now, if there's cause for that, I'm all for it, and let's beat up on the guy and let's make it right. And there's plenty of examples mm-hmm. of that. But a lot of it, and I've talked to other marriage guys who agree with me. You know, they'll say it in private. They won't say it in public. I'm the only guy who absolutely could miss it. Some of you guys, you buy all these wonderful relationship books, and you think, oh, Mark Gunger, how could he say such a thing? In private, when I talk to those guys, they'll say the same thing. They'll literally, one of them, I won't mention his name because he'd be furious, is he says, you know, the problems with the women. That's what he just said with me. And I looked at him, and I started laughing. I said, oh, my gosh. I said, you know, not that women are problematic. Don't girls get all free. It's what he's talking about is they're the ones always so mad. They're the ones always so upset. And it's founded in unrealistic expectations.
I agree.
For example, a lady tells me, you know, how do I get my husband to talk to me more? Because I want to come home, and I just want to have long, going into detailed conversations. And the thing is, he doesn't want to talk to you. Who says... And so, of course, you listen to some of these teachers. You should sit and talk and give all this. I don't know. I just think you want to talk a lot. Get a girlfriend. But a guy can't keep. Listen, here's an analogy that might be helpful. A guy comes to me, and he says, "What are you upset?" He says, "My wife won't play video games with me." What do you mean? I ask her, I want you to be part of my life, and I give her the control, and she doesn't even try, and she's really bad at it, and I'm so upset, because no matter what I do, I give her books about video games and everything else, and she won't connect with me, and, you know, I could really spend a lot of wonderful time playing games, and we could go to conferences and all kinds, you know, no, she doesn't want to play. Now, I've never had a man do that.
Right.
But the female version of it, oh, you get all the time.
Yeah. That's actually very good.
That's because I'm brilliant.
That's actually
anyway,
very
so
good.
My reaction to this is just, I'm afraid it gives a little bit unrealistic expectation, which means we'll have to save the last two for next show.
Here, I thought we would finish off the list.
That's no. Because you don't know who you work for.
Now you crush poor Daniel's spirits. He was hoping to find a woman who would sit and want to play video games with him all day.
I know, but see, women will do this. You know, he wants to talk and want to share and pour my... Look, to some degree, you have to do it. I get it.
Might I just jump in here?
No, because we're running out of time.
Okay, quickly.
Okay, go ahead.
Very quickly. The problem is that y'all men will sit and talk and do all the chatting and do all of this when you're dating her. And then when you pull the plug and stop, that's when she gets so mad.
The same thing happens with women. Oh, she'll go this and she'll play this. And she'll watch sports with him and she'll play the video
that's
games.
That's true.
Oh, I just had it. And then it's... Hey, so it goes both
that's
ways.
That's true. That's
it's just
true.
That the guy, I've never had a man complain to me.
They don't care.
That she won't be a guy.
Yeah.
What you get is women complaining constantly he doesn't act like a girl. Yeah. Having said that, I will take a break. We'll be back with your emails right after this.
Download your free Mark Gunger app today to see all of the latest from the world of Mark Gunger.
Here to talk to you about our Transition One program during this break. In Green Bay, we have started a new program called Transition One. It's a gap year program for young people coming out of high school, taking off a year to put God first in their lives before they go running off to college. The Bible says, seek first the kingdom of God. Christians are terrible at this. You know, we say we love Jesus, but as parents, we tell them, make sure you get this and make sure you have money. And you know, and then that's why so many people encourage their kids not to get married and wait. Because what we put first more than anything is the almighty dollar. And it is a mistake. It is a disaster. Having said all that, look, take time and put God first in your young people's life. Encourage them. Take a year off. Good grief. We have a huge failure rate of young people who leave high school and go into college and lose their faith, right? They give up on their faith, get caught in all kinds of stuff, sexual immorality and stuff. Why? Because they've never really had a chance to put their faith into action. All they're doing is living off your parents' faith and you keeping them busy in youth groups and stuff like that. They've never really had to stand on their own. A gap year program. There's many of them around the country, but we've just started our own. And these are popping up because people are realizing we've got a problem here. Slow down a bit. Right out of high school, put God first. Take 1 year of your academic year, put God first in your life. In our program, we emphasize, while it's biblical, it's not a Bible school, but it's about how to succeed in life, how to make choices, how to serve, what life is really about, putting God first in your life. It's for 6 months, and then the last 3 months, they serve overseas in some safe place, but it's someplace overseas where they get a chance to really see how people in other parts of the world, third world countries and whatnot, live. And you get a chance to serve and sweat and be uncomfortable, and there's not a McDonald's everywhere, and you can't be texting every 5 seconds. This is a good experience for your kids. They come back from this one-year program. Their lives are forever changed. Their priorities are set. Now they can go forward with the rest of their lives. Put God first in your life. Check it out. TransitionOne.org. TransitionOne.org. We are back on the Mark Gunger Show, talking about love, marriage, and relationships. Mark Gunger, Phil, and Wonder Phil, and Crazy Diane.
Come on.
All right, what do you got?
Okay, we have not had a stupid marriage argument for a while.
Ooh, I love stupid marriage arguments. We used to have a whole segment called Stupid Marriage Arguments. We had a hard time people sending us stuff.
Yeah, like, well, we had spent a long time.
The majority of emails we get are people who are just in crisis.
Yes.
And they don't email us just for fun, crazy stuff, yes. So that was hard.
Yes, but, okay, so what stupid marriage argument. He says, so this morning, and you actually know this guy, and I will out him if you want me to.
Wonder Phil.
No, oh. It wasn't him. It would be the man behind the wall, the other room. This is from Tim.
It's from Tim.
Okay. Oh my gosh, he says, so this morning I was asked to get the laundry out of the dryer.
All right. That's wrong, just right there.
There was a half.
You should never ask a man to take the laundry. Okay, go ahead.
There was a half-full basket in the basement on the same side the dryer was on. So there's a basket sitting by the dryer, half-full. Okay, mm-hmm. Right? So I figured those were clean clothes, and the clothes in the dryer could be put in said basket and brought upstairs. Mm-hmm. Then a short time later, I was asked by my wife what happened to the dirty clothes in the basement. I responded, those were dirty.
Were they folded?
The argument ensued. No, they were just looked like they were out of the dryer needed to be folded. Okay, so the argument ensued. I said that they were on the dryer side of the laundry area, indicating clean. Uh-huh. And if the clothes were dirty, they should have been dumped on the floor, making the basket empty for the clean ones from the dryer to go into. Uh-huh. The response from my wife was that the floor is dirty and it would be so really gross to dump clothes on the basement floor.
But they're already dirty.
I argued that the clothes are dirty. What would it matter? Anyway, what are your thoughts on who is right here?
I think you're right, but at the end of the day, you're always wrong. So suck it up, Timmy.
That's funny.
It depends on whether or not you want to live with this woman. If you want to live happily with this woman, you are wrong. All right? If you want to debate the essence of your argument, I guess you could say the floor is dirtier, and it would make the clothes dirtier.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I've learned in matters of most domestic matters, just let the girl
defer.
What's the point? You know, 'cause then some guy will quote to me, well, the Bible says the man's the head of the home. It also says better to live on the corner of a roof than in a house with a contentious woman. Same Bible. Mm-hmm. It's the Bible's way of saying, shut up, let her have her way.
And would the man like to be the head of doing laundry?
Which is a good point. Do you want to be in charge of doing laundry? No, then shut up. So what I would say is, you're right, dear. I'm not worthy to be in your presence. I should have myself flogged for being such an insensitive animal. And throw yourself on the mercy of the court. That's what you should do.
Clearly, I was in the wrong.
Mm-hmm. Clearly, I was in the wrong.
We have the laundry dilemma in our house with my family because they just don't understand. I know, because you don't do laundry. You don't do laundry.
See, that was his mistake. I started out right at the beginning, right?
Yes.
As soon as he said, I went to get the seat right there.
She asked him.
No, that's when you say, my leg.
I pulled the groin,
you know.
So she was wrong on two counts.
No, that's when you pour, like, rubbing alcohol on your hand and you light it on fire and go, And the thing is that burns off. It doesn't really burn you, but it'll look burns. Like it. And you go to the emergency room.
Let's try that.
And that's it. See, you just got to think let's of how to get away you. From these things. And Tim's just, know. He just lacks the experience.
No, but she was wrong on two counts. One for the...
asking.
Yeah,
asking.
The floor thing. The asking was, yeah.
So I think Tim should go home and tell her on
you
every
were wrong,
count
yes.
that she was wrong. I think
your first mistake was asking me to help with the laundry.
Yeah.
And assuming that I would do it correct.
No, yeah. No. Listen to me. I am a slime. I should be whipped. I'm so ashamed. I'll never lift my eyes again in public. Please forgive me. That's what you do. All right.
I'm not worthy.
I'm not worthy to be in your presence.
I'm not Monty worthy. Python, where they're walking down the street, hitting themselves on the
yeah, back. Yeah.
The self-flagellation.
Yeah. Flagellating. Mm-hmm. Which is okay. different than...
Do we help you, Tim?
Flatulating. Anyway. All right. What do you got?
Okay. Next email says, my wife and I attended your conference probably a year ago.
Okay.
You said something that has been on my mind for probably the entire year.
Well, just one thing?
Well, I don't...
I'm so disappointed.
I don't remember exactly how you said it. It was addressed to the ladies and something like, ladies, stop pushing your husband away. Someday you will never get him back.
Oh, I don't remember saying anything like that.
Well, you know when you're saying turn him down.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that, the sex
right
thing.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay. He says, in my own experience.
Let me explain to the audience, for those mm-hmm. of you who have never listened to my brilliance on the subject. The girl who's always saying, no, I don't want to have sex. No, you know, my hair is not right. You know, the barometric pressure is off. There's a fly on the outside of the house. You know, whatever your reasons are. At some point, these guys tend to. Shut down sexually, and then these women turn around, and then they're mad later because they're married to a man who's never passionate about them, not really. They help create the very problem, so mm-hmm. not always the root cause, but a lot of times it is.
Okay, so he says, in my own experience, I'm in a marriage where my wife has been pushing me away until very recently for probably most of the last 25 years.
Wow.
I finally threw in the towel emotionally about 4 years ago. She has tried to change and has done so to some extent, probably more than I ever expected possible. The problem is, I don't really care anymore.
Uh-huh.
So I'm trying to figure out what you meant, not as means of justification, but for my own understanding. Do you mean that eventually he won't care? He will eventually be incapable of caring or something else? I am just trying to figure out where to go from here.
I think you're thinking too hard. Just the reality is that, yeah, they shut down. Whether or not it's how he feels or cares or whatever is not the point. The point is, and that's what happens to them. They lose their confidence. Mm-hmm. They lose the confidence. Men early on in the relationship tend to be very confident in the sexual area. You want to nurture that without him killing you for the length of your marriage. If you get him so discouraged, he loses his confidence. And then he stops initiating. And at some point, it can get bad enough to where a guy like this, he just doesn't care anymore. You know, so I think it's sad. But, you know, at some point, just it is what it is, you know.
So what do you do once you reach that point?
What are you going to do? Everybody, you know, here's the problem. It's going to sound very odd, especially from a Christian viewpoint. Christians believe that Jesus will just fix everything. And because he'll fix everything, therefore I can live casually. So it doesn't really matter how I live, because he'll just fix it later. Right? I mean, people would, you ask most people, will Jesus fix that? Oh, yeah, he'll fix anything. Yeah.
But do you think people intentionally think that?
I do. I think.
She's like in this case that she was intentionally, well, it doesn't matter. I can shut him down because Jesus will fix that.
No.
This just happened.
No, I think just people always think that they don't take their actions seriously because at some point we can just fix it later.
Yeah.
You know, the car, I don't want to change the oil. It might, we'll just fix it. Or this, you know, I don't know. It's just. Life has consequences. The Bible says God is not mocked. You will reap what you sow. We think that grace will make it so that we don't reap what we sow. And I don't think the one cancels out the other. I think grace grants us forgiveness. God can intervene and bless. But I mean, you know, the reality, it's like, can Jesus heal you if you get run over by a car? Yes, he can. I believe he can. Mm-hmm. My advice is don't get run over by a car. Because there's a lot of people who do get run over cars that Jesus doesn't heal. Why? I don't know. So, you know, everybody, this happened. How can I fix it? You know, a lot of people want to know how I can fix it. I'm not big on the how you fix it. I don't know how you fix some of these things. What I'm big on is trying to tell people to avoid it in the first place. I'm much more into preventative relational medicine, mm-hmm. then afterwards. Mm-hmm. You know, how many emails I get? How do I fix? I just got one the other, you know, can we come talk to you? My husband's having an affair living with other women. You know, can you fix it? my answer to that is, I don't know if I can fix that. Right. I mean, it's possible.
You're talking a lot of work. That everything can be fixed. How come they just don't live in the, you know what? Life is life. And there's not always a fix. What is the fixation with the fixing?
Because everybody wants to fix their problems. Again, there might be some guys out there who have a great answer for you. I'm just not the guy. I'm much more into don't do this in the first place. Hopefully people listening to this show and listen to my DVDs and read my books, much of it is, let me warn you, avoid this.
Well, because sometimes you just have to endure. It becomes
if you do such damage to someone, at some point it's hard to fix it. You know, can God do it? Yeah. Then, you know, that's what you need to do. You need to pray through and trust God for a miracle. And, you know, I would pray then. You know, I don't have a three-step plan on how to fix 25 years of your wife saying she doesn't want any sex. Well, now she wants to have sex. I don't care. Yeah, that's what happens. How do I fix that? Pray. I don't know. I don't have a three-step. Someone might
have sex with her anyway. I mean, because it's in the reverse. You will tell these women, as you do in the seminar, doesn't matter what you don't feel like. You need to do the right thing and have sex with your husband. So now the boat gets flipped, the shoe gets whatever, and now what are you going to do? So what? You shut down. So what? Your confidence is there. So what? So what? Yeah. Have sex with your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares how you feel? That's what you say to the women.
Well, I'm not big
women.
On the feeling anyway. He says I don't care.
Yeah.
But he says that she's trying harder than ever before, so they must be doing something. Yeah.
Then sorry like, about your feelings are hurt. Well, sorry that your wife didn't want to have sex with you when she was too tired.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah. At some point, you just live with life, you suck it up, and you move on. I don't know. I don't know. Give me a headache. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Have a marriage dilemma? Email your questions to ask@markgunger.com, and Mark can answer them during one of our shows.
What will it be? Judgment or mercy? Why don't you let it be?
The music of Jimmy Bratcher. Check out his music, jimmybratcher.com. Answering your emails on the Mark Gunger Show. What do you got?
Okay, I'm trying to see which one we could sneak in here before the bottom of the... This one might fit. She says, I'm so annoyed by all of this. People say things like masturbation is good for your health and your sex life.
Uh-huh.
Now, what does Mark have to say about all of this? What is the reality? Are they completely lying? What does the church say about it? And why does no one except the people that support masturbation say anything?
I've been speaking against this forever. She's clearly not listened to me before. Why doesn't the church say anything about it? Because they're a bunch of cowards. That's why. You know, the reality is they're more afraid that one person will be offended. The church is so, you know, it is, you know, we rail about political correctness in this country and how on college campuses they have to have safe zones where no one can get offended and their feelings hurt. You know who the greatest offender of this is? Evangelical churches. And they have been for 100 years. The entire evangelical church is a safe zone so nobody can ever get their feelings hurt. And what? Listen to Christian radio stations. What is their thing that they constantly advertise?
Safe for the whole family. Welcome to Love Squirrel Radio. Christian radio, safe for the whole family.
Every Christian radio station in America, pretty much that's their thing. What they're saying is this is a safe zone, a fence-free zone. That, you know, we can point, you know, politically, oh, college campuses are doing that. Are you kidding? Christians do this forever. They still do it. The reason they don't talk about it is they want churches to be a safe, free zone. Consequently, people walk around with a lot of questions and carry a lot of baggage and have a lot of problems and do destructive things. What the churches hope is that somewhere one-on-one, someone will address it and fix it. That's their answer to that. I just think sometimes the pulpit needs to not necessarily be a safe free. Look, there's always safety and grace, but you need to confront some of these issues. The reality is masturbation does not improve your sex life. It makes it worse. And in fact, all you got to look it up. There's secular sites now that agree with this. You want great sex? Stop that stuff. Don't look at porn. Don't masturbate. And what was that Psychology Today article that we read that says... They, you know, they're secular people. They said they have discovered that when people stop this, their confidence comes back, their testosterone levels come up higher.
Yes.
Well, if that's true, that means that when you're doing it, it's sucking the life out of you. You know, so, no, I think it's bad. I think it's destructive. Go buy my book. Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage on Simon & Schuster. We'll be back with more right after this.
Caution, the Mark Gunger Show contains adult content intended for an adult audience.
John and Mark Gunger talking about the state you're in. In this case, the state of Wisconsin.
Really?
It's the state I'm in. What are we doing? What do you got? You got more emails?
I do. I have more emails. I didn't know if you wanted to
do anything
about
emails.
The flag page.
Or... we'll come back. Next show. Okay, I promise.
I promise
next show.
I know nothing about money. You want to do money?
I want whatever you want.
Okay. We'll do money.
Okay.
I don't have an email about money, but I found this article because it caught my attention when they said talking about money can sometimes be even harder than talking about sex for married people. Would you agree with that?
Harder? I'd say as hard. I don't know what'd be harder, but they're both very uncomfortable.
It can be even harder is what this one said.
It can be uncomfortable, yeah. Okay.
So anyway, they gave these conversation starters that you can use to speak about money with your spouse. I just thought that it was very interesting.
Okay.
One of the questions is, what is your most painful money memory?
Huh. Okay. I know people who recommend conversations like this.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I never have a conversation like that. What's the most miserable thing you can think of in your past? Just, you know, I try to move on and hope that those things.
Yeah, but do you know why that's an important question?
Go ahead, tell me why.
Because if there's like some trauma, past awfulness about money, and then every time you're arguing or he's doing this or she's doing that with money and that trigger is getting set off, that's why she's so upset or why he's so upset about money. And if you know that, then you can either understand that.
So give me an example. Do you have a traumatic money?
I don't. I don't have issues with money.
I don't know.
But apparently people do because they say that they argue about it all the time.
And
so.
And some psychologists have said it's tied to some childhood memory.
Well, like if you were raised really poor, you know? Not raised poor, if you were poor when you were being raised.
If you were poorly raised. I was very poorly raised.
Yeah.
So I was a disaster.
No, but
we had money, but I was very poorly raised.
I don't know. You know, maybe if you're a hoarder or something like that about money, and there's issues in your past about money, you know.
Your dad had a gambling problem or something like
that? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But poor, I mean, people act like poor is like some kind of horrible disease. I know a lot of people who are poor.
I just threw that out there.
And they just grew up happily. You know, my family, you know, my mother knew poverty very strongly when we were very little, but I was too young to remember it. You know, by the time she remarried a doctor, which, as one can well imagine, was a pretty nice lifestyle. So we always had money. My wife, much poorer, comparatively, certainly hard-working, you know, kind of get-by family. But I don't know that she has any. What's wrong? So you're poor. So what? We were poor after we got married. We were incomprehensibly, immeasurably poor. Actually, we struggled financially for the bulk of our lives. Mm-hmm. The last 10 years has been a turnaround for us. But I don't know. Give me an example. I've heard this.
So maybe if you were so poor that the lights and the heat, and I know you have your stories about that.
And we have stories like that.
Getting turned off. But then as an adult, maybe that's a fearful thing for you.
Do you remember times that we didn't have heat or lights? I don't know if you remember them. He doesn't remember. See, I guess the good thing is we protected our kids.
Yeah.
We didn't go around saying, there's no heat. We have no money. We're all going to die. I get that.
And so if that's the way that you were raised, and then
even then when we were poor, we have enough sense. You don't dump that on the kids. Yeah. I remember the house being freezing because the gas got cut off.
Yeah.
Because they can't do that now legally. But when we were our kids, they could. And the reason you find out that you were way back on your gas bill is they just shut it off. Boom, they shut it off. You wake up in the morning, it's freezing. Yeah. Well, right away we knew, so I'd have to run down and find some money and pay it or something. But the kids would say, what's wrong with this? Why is it so cold? We go, man, I don't know. We'll have to check the heater. Well, we knew what it was. We just got them bundled up.
Weren't sheltered, you could grow up with this fear of, oh my gosh, there's not enough money. We can't make the bills. We can't do this.
And they put fear in the kids. Yes. Okay, I guess that.
Okay, take it out of the money realm.
I'm starting to understand.
Okay.
If you put fear, if your parents put fear, it has to do with whether or not you're poor or not. It's just, if your parents put fear in your heart about money, I can see how that would make you very paranoid.
Or if you lost a large amount or something.
By the way, I talk to men about this. Don't be terrorizing your family. Don't be coming home sitting on a computer. I don't know how we're going to make it. I think we're going to lose our job. It's going to be hell. You guys can't spend any money because I don't know how we're going to make it. Really, you big jerk? Stop it. Be a man. Grow a pair. Well, we're having financial problems. Shut up. Talk about it with you and your wife. You don't emotionally vomit all your financial fears on your children. That! Okay, so now we're saying, as adults now, yes, who had that,
yes,
they could have some... Okay, yes, now that makes sense.
You're understanding?
I'm starting to get there.
Okay, because sometimes
I'm glad
the buttons,
I tuned into this show today.
Sometimes the buttons...
This is awesome.
Something.
The buttons I learned something.
Get pushed. Okay, and then on the opposite, what is your most joyful money memory?
Having money. In fact, the more money I had, the greater the memory.
Yeah.
Is as I recall.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah, it does seem to be... Okay, so what's...
Well, I don't know. I guess it would help facilitate the discussion. Maybe, like, what makes you happy about money, you know? Oh, when I bought this thing or I had this or... And maybe that's what is what helps your spouse make the money work for you if right. they can play into that.
So I'm starting to get...
Are you understanding?
Getting a picture here. I'm yes. learning from the show.
Because the next question is, gosh, I'm glad you learned something. How did these experiences shape your relationship with money?
Because people do have it. That's interesting. So we never had a problem with money because none of us grew up. One family pretty poor, the other family a lot of money, but neither one of us have any
issues
with it because we don't have it. And you said you don't either. You
know? No. So,
but there are people clearly, based on
that
what we just said, they do have.
Well, I know people
thing.
Who have lots of money issues. You know, they're the hoarders, the hold on tight to it, and everything about money is a freak out for them.
Actually, if I think back, back in the 1800s, when you were first born.
Mm-hmm.
Back when our grandparents and stuff who went through the Depression and
yes.
stuff, they tended to be real psycho about money.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
I remember my wife's got stories about her grandma just would come to the high school and have a fit because, you know, it costs $4 a month to rent the trombone that she was playing, or not,
yes.
when she played trombone, she
French
played
horn.
French horn.
She played French horn.
I mean, or was it $2? I mean, it was almost
yeah.
nothing, but she went, she said she'd
yeah.
march into that school and just give both barrels to it. I'm thinking, really?
Yeah.
Of course, from my family, we always had lots of money.
Yeah.
But she lived through
yes.
a period of time in America, and those who remember grandparents who lived through, and so a lot of you listen to the show would be great grandparents,
yes.
but yeah, they were always really stressed out about money, even when they had money.
Yeah. Well, and as a
And they
kid,
never threw anything away.
Right. No, they kept everything.
Rubber bands,
plastic wrap, tin foil, bags, everything.
See, today we would think, well, who would do that? But they were grown up doing that.
Yes.
So it does have. So, okay, good.
Yeah.
I'm learning.
Well,
this is great. This is good.
And now, not that this happened.
Wait, I got to take notes.
Stop. Not that this happened to your wife, but as a child, if you have your parent go crazy over $4, what does that say? I'm not worth it. I can't get my parents to spend money on me. I mean, it can really
okay,
jack
Okay, so the
with
couples who are...
I tell my kids when they say, well, how come I can't have this? And that kid got that. And I'm honest with them. I said, that's because their parents love them more than we love you.
And that's why he's wonderful.
That is kind of funny.
Actually, he does do stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But kidding around is hilarious.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
They always say real loud,
and then
just outrageous
like,
things to their kids.
Dad!
The kids say, stop that! You know,
yeah.
It's very funny. You know?
Okay, now this one could be really important. What three things did your parents teach you about money? And we've heard, and I know several people that they'll say, my dad taught me that you never let her know how much you have, your wife. I know many people who that is one of the things that their parents taught them about money.
Wow.
That's a bad thing to have learned about money.
I don't know. Did your parents ever teach you anything about money?
Not really. No.
Me either.
No, not really.
I don't think your parents. Did your parents ever teach you anything about money?
Not that I can remember.
Your father was a slob.
But you know, I intentionally teach my kids about money, and I have since they were very young. Yeah.
We actually find ourselves teaching our grandkids more about money than our own kids.
Yeah.
See, if we could have just gone right to the grandkids.
Yeah, right. That would have worked.
It's the kids that get in the way. They're the inconvenience.
No.
You know it's so much better when you get...
No.
Which actually is a good thing. That's one of the reasons you have grandparents to speak into the lives.
Yeah.
I never had grandparents.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'll teach my grandkids,
but technically
I
had,
kids.
But none of them spoke any English, so I never understood a word. One grandparent spoke Turkish, and the other one spoke Spanish, and we were lucky speaking English. And they were never around anyway. The one was... later in life, but he couldn't speak a lick of English. So,
So
I never had a grandparent who could sit down and actually
teach you anything.
Talk to you about life.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. No.
Talk to our kids about tithing.
No wonder
about
I'm
tithing.
So twisted today.
Yeah. No,
Which one of them caused it induced tears immediately?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great story, actually. No, you know who has a really good book is Dave Ramsey and his daughter, Teaching Your Kids About Money. And I saw her speak at a conference, and it was really good. And I felt so happy because everything that she said from the stage, I do with my kids. And so I'm like, yes, at least this is a good day. I've done some really good things.
So what I hear you saying, even though we skipped over flag page, I mean, the whole point of the flag page, which you can do at flagpage.com, it's to get a picture of who you are, and you start talking about and learn why people do what they do.
Kind of what shape
on an emotional level. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is the same thing is true with money.
Yes.
And I never think about this much because we just never.
Yes.
And here's the thing, on the surveys that we've taken, the two biggest issues are communication and money, and then sex behind that. Those are the three biggies. But just for my own, you know, everybody lives off their own experience. And all the years that I've worked with couples, I may have had one or two mention money. And that was just from a very dysfunctional, you know, like I was gambling or something crazy like that. So my experience is I've never had couples come to me asking me about that they're fighting over money.
That's because they go to Dave Ramsey. They ask you about sex because you're the sex dude. That's why you get all the questions.
No, this is before anybody asked me about anything. Nobody knew. I'm just saying my experience over my adult life has been the subject hardly ever came up. I don't know why. Apparently it's not. In fact, I was shocked when we did our own survey and found out that, yes, money is a big deal.
Yeah.
It's just, and my thought was, well, how come no one's ever come to that?
Yeah.
You know, but according to what you said, people say it's more difficult to talk about that than anything
else. Well, that's what this article
said. Anyway, the point being is I've noticed with couples that helping them to understand why they act the way they act, hence the program like the flag page, helps people to communicate. And that's my big thing is communication. Mm-hmm. The second thing would be the sex thing. Okay. But the same thing was with money. So what you're saying, according to this article, is to have those kinds of conversations.
Yeah.
It just seems foreign to me
that you would have
I never have experienced it and have almost had no one ever ask me about it.
Yeah.
But to sit down and say, what are your memories about money as children? Because, again, having it.
How were you raised?
I'm seeing it now.
You've got it?
It's just strange to me.
Because it's your experience.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with money. It's just we never, you know, and even my kids, when we grew up, were, you know, I think by the time they started remembering stuff, we started to do it pretty well. But we raised them very, very poor, but they never knew. No, you know, it's not about the amount of money. My wife had no money, but there was never trauma to it. But if there is trauma, to discuss that through, and it might help explain the arguments you're having. Okay, so I'm getting
a bit. Well, and on the other side, it doesn't necessarily have to be lack of money. If you were raised in a really wealthy family and everything was given to you, give, that can cause its own issues besides.
And that's why people listen to the Diane Brierley Show, because I tune in to get new insights.
Stop, you're mocking.
I would never mock. All right, we got to take a break. We're running long. We'll be back after this.
Want more of Mark? Visit markgunger.com. There you will find everything that Mark has to offer.
I see days that left us bronzed and breathless, then melted into night.
Breathless. It's not so romantic to say breathless. I have learned, however, that when you're breathless, you pass out.
The romance ends really quick.
They sing like, you make me breathless. Mm-hmm. And I don't quite understand. You're listening to the Mark Gunger Show. And talking about marriage. No, what are you talking about? Dating.
Dating.
Relationship. Okay, what do you got?
Dating. He says, I found an awesome girl I want to marry.
All right.
Our dating relationship length has been a little over 6 weeks. We've talked about everything we can think of that would possibly be unpleasant discussions after marriage. No
Man,
friend.
If you talk about everything you possibly think of after 6 weeks, what are you going to do after you're married to her for five years?
You have not.
I got nothing to say. Said everything after 6 weeks.
Have not scratched the surface of all the unpleasantries that can pop up.
Okay.
Anyway, we have both polled married people for advice as much as possible. We communicate very well. So my question is, how long should we need to know each other before we decide we know enough to get married? I'm 22. She's 21. My parents are hesitant, but probably supportive of the decision we make. But her parents would probably have us wait a year or so before wholeheartedly supporting it.
You know, I honestly don't have an opinion on this. I know couples who, was it Joy and Travis?
6 weeks.
6 weeks. And they got married. And they got how many kids they got now?
Four.
Four kids. They've been happily married for years. One of the most fabulous couples we know in our lives. So I don't have.
We were 90 days before engagement.
You met her and 90 days later, you were engaged.
Or money back guarantee. I
So I don't look in I think in my book, Laughing Way to a Better Marriage. Anybody ever read that book?
Yeah, 2.5 years. I read that book over don't and over a, and over.
Is there a copy in there?
There's one over here.
There you go.
On the floor.
Where it doesn't belong.
Get this book.
Used, buy it today.
Used to prop up a table or something. Uh-huh.
All right, somebody talk about something.
What part are you looking for in your book?
When I read about from that rabbi.
Oh, Shmuley?
Shmuley. Where in the world would I find that?
I can find it if you want to keep talking.
I didn't know I had this many pages.
This is funny. We write the 60-page books now.
I would never read a book like this.
Find it.
I know. That's why
easily.
I write smaller books now.
Yeah.
I don't look. I was going to read from this. Get the book. It's a great book.
Next question.
So, somewhere in there is talking about this rabbi who says that to this day, Hasidic Jews, conservative Jews, they meet each other. And was it like within 30 days?
They have to decide, yeah.
Whether they're not going to get married. In Indian cultures, they meet for the weekend and decide whether or not to get married. So,
I think if you have two people who really know what it means to have a good marriage, what it really takes, which is hard work. And they really go in it. And as this guy said, they're asking whatever questions they need to. They're checking with married couples around them. Yeah, I don't think it takes a year.
No, if anything, I'd say don't go more than a year, especially you girls. Don't let these guys date you for years on end. Don't be so goofy. Well, he's going to marry me someday. You don't know that. And all you're going to do is waste your years of your life. If he doesn't put your ring on your finger asking you to marry him at the end of 1 year, you dump him and move on. Don't waste your lives with all this nonsense. Now, can you do shorter than that? Yeah, I think you can.
Was it that part?
Yeah, it's getting close. But, I have to go through here, but we won't do that to these people.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, what else you got?
This is what you should do on the show. You should actually
what's their question?
Read your book.
What was the question?
They wanted to know.
We should do the same. I'll just read the whole book.
How long should they wait? There you go. Then we get the audio version of it.
Oh, I don't know. The reality is, you do have to deal with your families and stuff. Like I would come.
Well, their parents are saying a year before they could support. I don't think a year is unreasonable for them to be.
I don't think it's unreasonable. No, I just say he's asking me, is it okay if we get married now? As far as I'm concerned,
sure.
Yeah. And your parents say, yeah, we got to live with her family size. If they say, well, wait at least a year. Say, how about we get engaged and we'll set the wedding for a year from now.
But do be aware, you have not possibly discussed everything there is to discuss.
On the other hand,
please don't fall into that trap.
Again, I know so many couples, they got married very quickly and they did just perfectly fine.
Well, it doesn't mean that they had it all worked out before they...
Whatever, now, we were perfect.
But now, it depends on what you're talking about. Now, I know people who, you hear of people who met each other, in a short amount of time in Vegas... And in the cloud of alcohol,
that's
got married,
different.
And that was a disaster. Okay, now that, but no one's thinking clearly.
No.
But I think that is it possible within a matter of weeks or a month or 2-3 months to decide, I want to marry this person and have a successful life with them? Absolutely, I think that's possible. What should you do? I think you got to work it out with her parents.
Yeah.
try and negotiate with them. See if you can come to a settlement on how long you need to wait. All right, we'll be back with our final segment right after this.
Attend Mark's Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage event. Visit laughyourway.com for upcoming dates and locations.
I don't ever want to leave. It just feels right.
Just feels right.
Just feels right. We're back on the Mark Gunger Show. What do you got?
Okay, this is a mom writing dating question about her daughter. She says, my daughter, age 26, is a divorced single mom of a 2-year-old. Because of her background, she has lacked a healthy relationship. She has now met a wonderful man who checks off all the boxes of what she really wants in a man. He is 28, definitely has no experience dating, and because of it, he doesn't know what he's doing, like how to hold hands or kiss her or so on, she says. My daughter was the initiator after several dates to hold his hand, and they have kissed, but he has no clue what he's doing. My daughter fears that the physical chemistry will never be there. So the question is, how long do you wait to know if there is chemistry, and how important should physical chemistry be in finding a mate?
I don't know. I flunked chemistry. What do I know about chemistry? I don't know. Look, if you don't like the guy, dump him and move on. I don't understand these people.
If you're concerned about his kissing skills, I think that after marriage you can work on that.
One would think, but what she's saying is he doesn't seem to be interested in any of the physical side of the relationship, which is entirely possible.
It's possible. Then
you're, look, when you're dating someone, here's the point of dating. Class, pay attention. Class, take notes. The point of dating is, number one, does this person make me want to, I don't know, vomit, okay? If he does, you move on. Mm-hmm. Or you find something that's really irritating about that person. You move on. Or something about them that's really lacking and it disturbs you. Then you move on, you know? Or if you fight all the time and you need marriage counseling before you're married, you move on. When you're dating someone and you find, gee, there's something that really bothers me, you don't write me. You don't write anybody. You don't call anybody. You don't even need to talk to anybody. I don't know. It's okay to get some advice from some friends. But if you're with someone, you go, you know, I don't like this person. Or, you know, I'm with this person and he smells. He just smells really bad. He's got, some people have BO problems. Like,
halitosis.
When there's this blue fog around your head, I don't know. You move on. Now, unless you live in a part of the country where there's like only two available single people, all right, you might have to work through some of those issues. So I don't know. What am I supposed to tell her? She doesn't feel much of a spark in this guy. He doesn't seem like he's interested. He doesn't grasp the concept of hand-holding. That bothers you? Move on. Yeah. I don't understand why people make it so
complicated.
Some
people might not mind, but if you mind.
Here's the thing. You should try and marry somebody that you like. Very complicated. All right? See ya!
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!